Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So as we embark on a new week and the second half of 2020, we reflect on what investors have been focused on as of late and where markets may be headed over the next few months. We'll also discuss the June jobs report and the latest allocation recommendations from the Chief Investment Office. So joining me here on the line this morning for the conversation, I'm very pleased to welcome back Jason Dreho. Jason is the head of asset allocation for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So Jason, good morning. Welcome back. Hope you had a very enjoyable July 4th weekend and looking forward to our conversation today.
It was very nice to break it down. Thanks for asking. I hope you did as well.
Well, Jason, appreciate that, and likewise. And before we get into what will be in focus throughout the course of this week and even the second half of the year, maybe we can begin by looking back to a few stories from last week, and that includes on Thursday. We did receive an abundance of key data points, which included the June jobs report, and that's coming off the heels of that very unexpected May jobs report. So, Jason, can you spend a few moments just breaking down the data for us, what the data revealed, and how the markets responded?
So it was another kind of positive month on the jobs front. The headline number that got the most of attention was the total number of new non-farm jobs created in June. That was 4.8 million. That exceeded expectations by the expected number was 3.3 million, so around 1.5 million more than expected. The unemployment rate fell to 1.1% versus an expected level of 12.3%. And even the sort of labor force participation picked up a little bit to 61.5% versus the expected of 61.2. That matters because it kind of reflects people who are actually coming back into the workforce. There's been some issues with the data in May and even prior to that in terms of how workers are being classified regarding, if they've been sort of furloughed, so they'll end up coming back to the job. Is that classified as unemployed or from not looking for work? So there's been a little bit of distortion in the data, but I think all told, what we've seen in the past couple of months is, a pretty solid, rebound in the jobs market. And that was contributed to why we saw on Thursday, the equity markets were up, the S&P of 100, over, 0.5%. So it's a positive day. Keep in mind that Thursday, obviously pre-holiday, long weekend, was a relatively kind of light trading day. So there was a little bit difficult to read too much into the reaction in that context, but again, it's sort of reflective of the positive news on the job front. The one caveat I would add to the numbers is that when they actually take the estimate for the jobs in any given month, they have a survey week, which is usually around the middle of the month. And so in this case, that would have happened, approximately sort of June 15th. The more recent news that we've seen in terms of rising number of, virus case counts in the U.S., some signs that could be at least in certain areas of the country being a negative for growth or slowing down the recovery would suggest perhaps that by the end of June, the pace of job recovery perhaps had moderated a little bit from what had done early in the month. So while certainly very good news, I think we just have to be aware that, it's where things matter is sort of where they go from here. And some of the latest news at the end of June was a little less favorable for the outlook for the jobs market, at least in the very near term. Other data, I think at least noteworthy from last week was actually more on Wednesday. The ISM manufacturing index was released on Thursday. It was over 50, it was at 51.2. That is positive because anything sort of above 50 tends to correspond with kind of expanding manufacturing activity. If it's below 50, it's contracting. This fell below around 40 back in April, so we've seen a very kind of sharp comeback. In this case, there is kind of, a bit of a V from the climb back from kind of the February time period to where we are now. It likely overstates just how much manufacturing has come back. If it's more on a relative basis from month to month, it certainly signifies there's definitely been an improvement of economic activity, especially on the manufacturing and production side of the economy. So that's a positive. But the overall level, and we still need to keep in mind, is still kind of definitely much lower than it was earlier in the spring. So all told, the economic data that we saw last week is consistent with what we've seen in the past roughly 6 weeks of, the economy sort of normalizing, economic activity coming back at a pretty healthy clip. But that's not going to moderate, at least from the rate of change perspective going forward.
Well, it was a very busy macro calendar last week, and especially given the shortened week, a lot of data to consume over the course of 4 days. So thank you for breaking that all down for us, Jason. And I know last week it also marked the conclusion of Q2, the second quarter. So we're now into the second half of 2020. If we focus in on Q2 for a moment, Jason, can you speak to how markets generally performed? And I know we did witness a cooling off, so to speak, in risk assets towards the end of June. Maybe you can spend a few moments just commenting on the factors that contributed to that performance as well.
So we saw very strong performance in the second quarter across kind of all risk assets, whether it was equities or kind of credit markets. Even other asset classes such as oil bounced back very significantly during the quarter because it dropped quite low in April. So overall, for like the S&P 500, the returns for the quarter were around 20%. We saw for credit markets, total returns for credit, whether it was investment grade or high yield, were in either the kind of high single digits or in the case of high yield, close to 12%. So very strong quarter for risk assets. For equities, the best quarter, I believe, since the fourth quarter of 1998. So it just kind of puts in perspective how strong the bounce back was. Of course, this is coming after first quarter when the total return was down around minus 20%. So it's not fully comfortable circle, but pretty close. But if you look at the quarter as it's gone on, and even if we go back to March 23rd, the day we had the low, very sharp bounce back in late March and then really through April. But then if we look at the performance for the month of June itself, definitely more moderate pace, including toward the end, a little bit of certainly more volatility in the last couple of weeks. The momentum that we saw early on, some of it obviously is going to moderate given the pace of the move. But the most recent sort of kind of choppiness in the market, you could attribute to the fact that what we've seen across the country is the rising case counts in a number of key states from Texas, Florida, Arizona, California. The fact that we're setting kind of sometimes all-time highs in terms of the number of new cases on each day. So this just speaks to the fact that the virus certainly isn't fully under control. And what now we've seen a number of states either reimpose some restrictions, albeit quite modest, whether it means kind of closing bars, for example, in Texas. Others delaying kind of the reopening, such as New York State, or at least New York City, where restaurants were supposed to open to 50% capacity indoor seating today, and that's been delayed indefinitely. And then other states still are actually kind of proceeding on schedule in terms of reopening. Given that sort of that restrictions could be an indication of a slowdown of economic activity, at least on the consumption side, that's partly what we saw in the past week or two of it's a little bit of kind of slowed on the momentum and some choppiness in the markets. There's concern about this being a bit of a speed bump for the recovery, if not potentially a more significant delay. So that's kind of where we ended the quarter. A little bit of that uncertainty of where do we go from here.
Jason, to your point, over the past few weeks, and we've spoken about this in prior conversations, but we have been seeing new record case counts emerge across several states. You think about these Sun Belt states out in California, yet equity markets have seemingly been able to shrug off the rising number of COVID-19 cases across the country. Jason, what do you think that is, and how should investors assess this risk right now?
I think there's a few reasons why. I think the markets have been able to be pretty resilient overall, given at least the negative headline news. One is that when you look at these actual details of how the virus is impacting from a health perspective, it's not as sort of dire as the headline numbers of all-time record number of cases on a daily basis would suggest. For one, it's a bit misleading to compare the number of cases we have today versus what was being reported back in March and April. The number of tests being done on a daily basis today is around 600,000 or even a little higher. Back in kind of late March, early April, it was in the 100,000 range. If you actually look at the positivity rate, the number of tests that are coming back positive, overall, it was actually a little bit higher back then than it is now. If you assume we were conducting the same number of tests back in early April, let's say 600,000, the positivity rate was similar, maybe just a little bit lower, the number of cases we would have been reporting at that point in time would actually be far higher than what we're reporting now. So when you sort of try to adjust the data to make a little bit more apples to apples comparison, what we're seeing now probably wouldn't be new all-time highs, but certainly a rise, but not like what they were back in April level. So I think we just need to kind of think about that because it's an important caveat in terms of, is it worse today than it was 3 months ago, and perhaps not when all things are considered. Other indications that kind of support that is just the actual number of hospitalizations, which is probably the kind of the cleanest measure we can get that, you know, if people are sick, they're going to go to the hospital regardless of whether they, tested for the virus or not. That's certainly been ticking a little bit higher in the past week, couple of weeks, but we're not at the levels that we were back in early April and mid-April, like still quite a ways to go to that, which is, it's concerning that it's rising, but again, putting that in context, it's not as bad as it was then. So that's overall, when we look at the situation with the virus itself and then add in the fact that the number of people being infected tend to skew younger, so the average age is definitely much lower today than it was a few months ago. And we know that younger people tend to be, have better outcomes overall versus kind of older people. So that's again going to lead to sort of a better new situation. So that's one factor. The second is today versus 3 months ago, prospects having a kind of, let's say, medical solution, whether it's a vaccine or other treatment, is definitely improved today versus where we were in April. There's likely, some rising chances that we'd have a vaccine solution by the end of the year, potentially at least available to, essential workers and hospitals and a few others. So that's definitely kind of changed the market narrative because the view is we're going to get better data on that, and therefore we're just, that much closer, 2 months closer to actually having that being a solution. And once we kind of know that's a solution, I think the markets will be able to kind of look through any kind of short-term noise. And the final factor is, in terms of kind of the shutdowns, how much they're going to entail, it's definitely less than it was back in April in terms of busy lockdowns across much of the country. What we're seeing now is a much more measured kind of a level of activity that's being kind of restricted. We also have greater knowledge in terms of how to kind of social distance, whether it's wearing masks, like things that could be done that could curtail the rapid spread of the virus without requiring the same amount of shutdowns that were done earlier, and therefore going to not have nearly the same negative economic impact. So those three factors together, I think, are partly why equity markets are certainly more resilient today than they were back in March, because we think we're in a better situation overall. We have a better understanding of how this is likely to play out.
Right. So albeit the pandemic remains a chief concern, as you outlined for us, different circumstances today versus a few months ago in terms of risk mitigation, the process for that, and the efforts underway towards achieving a vaccine. I do want to focus in on markets this morning. If we look to see how overseas markets are trading, gains across Europe, and we did see some strong gains in Asia overnight, including the Shanghai Index higher on its session by over 5%, and that's translating to the futures here in the U.S. this morning. We're just about 10 minutes or so away from the open, but all of the major indices are trading higher, leading into that by 1.3 to 1.5%. What's driving market movements today, Jason, and what will the markets be focused on near term?
So just in terms of the performance today, you alluded to the U.S. markets looking like they're going to open up over 1%. Much of Europe is around 1.5%, and Asia even higher with the Shanghai Index around 4.5%. One of the things that certainly for China that kind of was perhaps the catalyst for the moving the markets higher today was a report in in the Chinese kind of newspaper, where they kind of quoted the state media saying they were quite kind of bullish, and that they kind of to quote them, they said they think a healthy bull market after the pandemic is now more important for the economy than ever, which actually triggered a number of searches in China for open a stock market account. So essentially you're getting from indirectly official reports from China saying this is good for the stock market, all else equal, that's a sign that for investors that the policy support will be there. That's supportive of the rest of Asia, and that's kind of cascaded into Europe and now in the US as well. There wasn't much other kind of major economic news over the past 3 days given the quiet long weekend in the US. And if anything, that the story on the virus it wasn't necessarily getting better over the weekend in a significant way to sort of cause markets to move higher. I think some of it is just after the kind of the end of the quarter when people were sort of maybe taking a little bit of profits or sort of rebalancing. Now that we're more clearly into the start of the third quarter, based off the positive news on China and sort of positive sort of just economic data overall, I think that's kind of the key catalyst for what we're seeing for markets higher today. Other than that, there wasn't any significant news on any real front otherwise to suggest why the market should be up 1+% as of this time.
So, Jason, as I alluded to earlier in the conversation, we have now entered the second half of the year. Can you spend a few moments just walking us through your mid-year market outlook and maybe speak to how the Chief Investment Office is currently recommending that investors be allocated at this time?
One is what we call the Fed story. The second is the second wave story of the potential virus increasing. And the third, is the U.S. election. And so then our outlook for kind of going forward is that we still think the Fed, really policy supports, you know, on the fiscal side is tied in with that, is the key market driver. And there's still kind of legs in that. We expect on the fiscal side of, a fiscal package before the end of July in the U.S. that could total at least a trillion, if not more. So again, providing more support for the economy, but also financial markets. The two other stories is the second wave story. And you could argue that what's going on in the U.S. right now is still part of the first wave. And the U.S. election, that's going to add, volatility to the markets. And we've kind of seen that already the past couple of weeks. But they're not going to be the kind of the main driver, at least for the time being. So overall, given the kind of the story on the virus itself, and I alluded to what some of the reasons why I think that the virus outlook is maybe not as bad as the headline numbers would suggest, coupled with the strong economic momentum, and that goes back to the initial points in terms of the job market and the recovery, there could be a bit of a slowdown in the pace of recovery in the next couple of months, given some concerns about the virus, but overall the trend is in the right direction. And then we have the fiscal and monetary policy support. All that is kind of generally supportive, I think, kind of for risk assets. And that's our overall sort of macro view for the rest of this year. Given how much markets have moved, I think, the upside to some extent for equities overall, for risk assets and credit markets, is certainly going to be more limited after a very good second quarter. So the pace is going to come down much, quite a bit. But still, we think over the next 6 months and certainly over the next 12 months, we see positive returns for equity markets and for credit markets, which is why we have, both kind of the most preferred kind of status, that we view this as an opportunity for investors to make sure they're kind of fully invested, certainly in equity markets. And when we get to the volatility and the pullbacks, these are opportunities for investors to add exposure overall to the markets. In terms of kind of, preferences, we like both U.S. and kind of global equities. We've seen certainly in June, outperformance for emerging markets, some of other international developed markets versus U.S. equities. Some of that is due to just kind of the reacceleration of global growth and kind of a catch-up trade for these other regions. Some of it is due to the improvement of, the virus elsewhere in the world, certainly say in Europe and Asia versus the U.S. So that's kind of, I think it's a way of diversifying your portfolio in case things do escalate in the U.S. that to have an international equity exposure to plan that recovery there is beneficial. Same thing within the U.S. We like mid-cap equities as a way to kind of continue to play the kind of this recovery as an asset class that has underperformed, at least relative to the large cap. It tends to do better in these economic recovery phases. In credit markets, we still like both investment grade, high yield. Spreads have come in quite a bit, so there's a little bit less kind of performance potential. But with the Fed being aggressive in terms of buying and supporting credit markets, it's really hard certainly to be underweight those exposures. And we still think there's kind of, relatively kind of decent risk reward, in them given, the support that's coming from the Fed. So overall, there's opportunities in the marketplace, but the return that investors should have for this quarter, at least versus last, should be much more moderate. And that really kind of applies for the year overall. But generally speaking, they should be still invested given the tailwind we see from policy support, ongoing economic recovery, and I think better than kind of the headline numbers suggest on the virus itself.
Jason, great catching up with you this morning. Very helpful conversation to begin the week. Again, this morning, recapping Q2 performance, touching on the June jobs report and last week's other key economic indicators. I spent a few moments getting into why risk assets have been responding the way they have been to the recent developments specific to the pandemic. Also touching on what's in focus for this week, providing a second half outlook and getting into CIO's current allocation recommendations. So we covered a lot of ground on today's podcast, Jason. Very helpful, and appreciate your insights as always.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dan.
And again, we have been joined today by Jason Dreho. Jason is the head of asset allocation for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. As always, I do want to point out that there are many publications available for you now up on UBS Online Services. If you are a client of UBS, as always, feel free to reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of any of the publications directly. Top of the Morning will be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.